Chairman of our board isn't here.
Good morning, representatives.
Hello.
Good morning.
How are you?
It's been such a long time.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. It is Wednesday, January 29th, and today we're going to have a public hearing only on the Department of Aviation and also be considering Senate Bill 5504 related to new and increased fees adopted by the Department of Aviation. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Kathy Miller, and she will give us an update from that LFO's perspective. I think right now, if it's okay with the committee, I'll turn the gavel over to our new senator over here and put him in charge.
Good.
And I'll be back with you as soon as I'm feeling better.
Are you still feeling ill, Mr. Chairman?
Not a good day. Thanks, everybody. Turn, boss.
Okay. Get better.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
With you now having the gavel as a freshman, I think now's our time to just solve this whole budget issue. Just get moving. We could be out of here in 20 minutes.
What if it would be so easy, huh? We'd love to hear.
I think LFO is going to be...
Oh, excuse me, LFO first.
My name's Kathy Miller. I'm with the LFO office. I'm the budget analyst. In front of you, you have quite a few packets of information. I'd like to start out with the one that says orientation and background. I've given you just a little information on general aviation on the national level to show the significance of the industry of general aviation. Oregon Department of Aviation supports the general aviation industry in Oregon. And it was created, the agency was created in 1999 as a standalone agency. If you will go to the second set of handouts, page 2, it says agency purpose. Just like to go over a few of the responsibilities that the agency has, and I know that the agency will go into more detail. It advocates for the safe operation, growth, and improvement of aviation as an integral part of Oregon's transportation network. Plans for development of airports, state airways, airplane industries, and aviation. Conducts aviation safety and public education programs. Assists local government with aviation technical and planning advice. Oversees planning, operation, maintenance of 28 state-owned airports and the state-owned airplanes, property, and equipment, and registers all pilots, non-military aircraft, and aircraft providers in Oregon. The second page shows the governor's recommended budget. There are 8 major sources of revenue, fuel tax being one of the largest, and the federal funds that they receive from federal grants, which are used as other funds, being the other largest piece. They also receive revenue from registration and fees, miscellaneous donations, contributions, leases, fuel flowage, search and rescue, bond sales, and the remainder is the beginning fund balance. The projected revenues for the 2003-2005 biennium are $16,991,736. The budget is at $16,026,262, and the agency has 16 positions and 16 full-time equivalents. The next slide here shows the budget size. You can see on the first one that the budget is almost broken in half between the operations and the capital construction. There is no Well, there's 0% on capital improvements because it is zeroed out every biennium. And then there's a little slice of the budget, which is the search and rescue. Below is the budget by category. It shows the personal services and supplies, capital outlay, special payments, and debt service. The things that drive the budget for the Department of Aviation is, one, the general dissatisfaction with commercial airlines, the greater reliance on rural and community airports, the demand for larger corporate and charter aircraft. Since 9/11, air travel security, there is a perceived thought that terrorists would not actually attack small general aviation airplanes and airports. Community interest in modern airport facilities for access to urban and recreational areas. It also adds economic development to these small communities and the demand for alternative connections and increasing travel options. The next slide, I'm going to skip this. It's a comparison, and you will understand it more after you go through the budget. It shows the sources of the income and how they have changed since 1999. The next set of handouts is staff's analysis of the governor's budget. I don't want to repeat myself too much. The governor's recommended budget is $16 million plus. And as you go through this, you'll find discussion on the revenue sources, the relationships. The graph shows, again, the sources. That department has four main programs. The first one being the operation programs. This is the majority of the positions and the majority of the work that is done by the department. They have six service areas: airport services, airport maintenance, aircraft and pilot registration, statewide services, airport operations, and planning. The budget environment has changed a lot for the department in that a couple of things have happened. First, they lost 25% of their staff due to retirement, and they plan to lose more by the end of 2005. This means that a lot of history, experience, and knowledge will be leaving with the retirees. The new state aviation board, seven-member board, has organized itself and is beginning to aggressively pursue aviation issues and provide strategic direction to the department. The terrorist attacks of September 11, the rising cost of new aircraft and fuel, again, dissatisfaction with airline service, all these drive the budget. The governor's budget for the operations program is $7,800,000. The second program they have is the search and rescue. And this, the search and rescue program, basically they register pilots and the pilots pay a registration fee. The fees are net of operating costs are administrative costs go to the Office of Emergency Management, which then uses that money on search and rescue efforts. The capital construction program is another one of the big budget areas, and the primary source of revenue for this is the federal grants that they receive from the Federal Aviation Administration. Most of the grants are paid 90% and 10% is a match. And a lot of those can be paid through the department, their own grant program, which they give to communities. Let's see. In the governor's budget, he provides $8,016,000 other funds. The budget has four elements, the first being a $2 million capital construction program to build a new Salem office building, and I know that you will hear more about that. A $6,016,000 transfer of construction funds from the agency's operation program to the capital construction program. It eliminates non-recurring construction costs for improvements that have been completed, and it adds a $1 placeholder for capital construction projects for the Cottage Grove Airport. The capital improvement program, like I said, is zeroed out every biennium, and this is for airport improvement projects that are less than $500,000 and can be accomplished in one biennium. The next handout is a list of all the prioritized services from the agency, and the agency will be going over this and giving you more detail about that. The next one is just an average salary comparison. I am attempting to find more comparable salary, wage, and programs with other states. I will keep looking. The agency, I know, has a comparison that it will present. And with that, I want to go back to the first handout and just go through a few other things. There was a budget note in the 2001-2003 budget bills. It was with the Department of Forestry and State Police. It asked the department to establish a panel and analyze the use of the state-owned aircraft.
Excuse me, you said you went back.
To the first one.
Okay. Maybe this would be a good time to turn the chair back over to the more senior member. Senator George is not feeling well.
I saw him in the hallway. So he did not look well.
I'll defer to you.
Okay. Did you have a question?
No.
Oh.
No, I was just giving you back the gavel.
Well, okay. That doesn't matter. But thank you.
There were no audit reports completed for the agency in the past 2 years. There was one report. This was in response to the budget note, and it was the Oregon Aircraft Use Task Force final report. And that was regarding the analysis of state-owned airplanes and aviation. The agency does have a fee adjustment bill, and what it does is ratify the increases that the department put into effect on January 1st, 2003. I have listed what the fees are. Previously, the fees were either $10 a month or $12, depending on the airport. The department projects annual revenues in amount of $14,244. However, not all the information is available on the types and the number of airplanes. The revenue generated from the fees will support the airport maintenance section of airport services, and that additional revenue is not anticipated in the governor's budget. A few of the significant policy or oversight issues considered by the emergency board: in April 2002, the legislature approved a $1.2 million other funds expenditure limitation. This was to support the pavement maintenance program. The third session, House Bill 50191, added $82,740 other funds for employee salary and benefit compensation. The November 2002 emergency board, the legislature acknowledged the report, the aircraft working group's report on the budget note. And in January 2003, the agency asked for permission to apply for two Federal Aviation Administration grants. Under the relevant issues, trends, or special challenges, the first one has to deal with the building here in Salem, which is the only building that the agency owns. I have down that it was built in 955, which is a little older than it should be. It was built in 1955.
That's close.
And it has some fundamental deficiencies. There was an independent evaluation done, and it stated that the employees' needs are not being properly met. The department requests $2 million in other funds for construction of a new building, and the building is projected to provide sufficient space for the next 40, 50 years, allowing for a 25% growth rate. Operation and maintenance costs are estimated to decrease from $6.12 to $4.60 per square foot. The other issue is the department's transfer of $6 million in federal grant funds from operations to capital construction. The funds are made up of 23 separate projects across the state. Each project is estimated at less than $500,000. However, the department argues that the transfer is logical because the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, issues one grant per year for multiple airport and multiple projects. And so when you add these together, they will exceed $500,000. In some cases, the department simply requests the funds on behalf of a local government. The money is then given to the department. The department distributes it to the local government, and they do their work themselves. And lastly, the department claims that the life cycle of most of the projects exceed a two-year period. The department maintains that tracking the incoming and outgoing of these funds over a multiple biennium would be easier in the capital construction budget. And I did miss one point, and that is that some of these projects are also coupled with other federal grants, and when you add those together, they also go over $500,000. The department has requested a $1 placeholder for capital construction for improvements to the Cottage Grove Airport. I'd like to make it clear that by allowing a $1 placeholder, the legislature would approve only the $1 limitation. And this was given by the department to cover the possibility that the legislature may want them to allow the project to proceed during the interim. It is incumbent upon the department to come back to the E-Board during the biennium for expenditure limitation and project approval. And lastly, the department will be introducing legislation that provides for penalties for failure of pilots and aircraft to be registered with the department. There are no vacant positions in the agency, and that is the end of my presentation.
Any questions?
I've been promoted. thank you, Chair Dukes. First of all, I need to begin by letting the committee know that I do have a potential conflict of interest. While I do not receive dollars directly related to this department, I do have clients who do work with them, and so I want that on the record.
So noted.
Now, question. I've had a chance to tour the building that they're talking about, the office building, and I must tell you folks, it's pretty dilapidated. It's been fully depreciated and fully used. The concern I have, though, is that there may be some sentimental value, and you folks just would miss that building so much if you lost it. What I would point out to you is as we were taking a tour, I was shown an electrical outlet that had to be replaced every time they wanted to use their computer system because you could not operate certain pieces of equipment and your computer stations at the same time, just to share with you how bad that building was. And while that's not a plug for the building, that is just a statement of the reality of what that building was facing. So I guess I didn't have a question, just a comment.
Senator Morris.
What kind of analysis was done with respect to finding some place to rent as opposed to build? This is not the right climate today to be talking about capital construction. even though some of these funds appear to be sourced from other areas.
Right. For the record, I'm Ann Crook, Director of the Oregon Department of Aviation, and I have actual copies of an architectural analysis that we had on the building. That the question that I asked at this time, and that was in 1999 that was done, is what would be the most cost-efficient way to renovate the building so that it would meet our needs. And the bottom line that they came up with was the most cost-efficient way to provide building space is not to renovate the current building, but to start from scratch. The question you asked was what analysis did we do on looking for other sources. Mm-hmm. And what we started with in this report, and again, I'll be happy to share it with you if you'd like, is that it's very important for our business to be located at the airport because we have a significant number of fly-in clients, pilots that instead of driving to the office, they fly to the office and they can get right to us by that means. And at the Salem Airport, there just isn't a facility available to rent. So that's the issue there. Additionally, the land that the current building is on is owned by the agency, and so that's an asset that we have that's on the airport, and it's actually pretty valuable land on the Salem Airport. The city of Salem has offered to swap that with us so that they can have this valuable piece of land on the property and offer us a different piece of property someplace else on the airport so that we wouldn't have to, building a new building wouldn't include purchasing the property to build it on. We've also talked with the military department about needs that they have to add some additional facility space at their operation that's on the Salem Airport, and ways that we could partner in providing joint facilities. And part of that is like a combination training room, meeting room, conference room type of place. They want to build a building that does that, and that's part of our need for our building as well. So we've talked with them about locating on their campus, or even if we don't co-locate with them, doing some sort of joint use preparation of that new facility so that might be all. Basically, that's where we are so far.
Your present building is located at the airport?
Yes, it is.
With that,
Airport,
you go ahead and start your presentation.
Okay. I've already introduced myself. I also want to introduce behind me is Rebecca Jasso. She's ODA's fiscal analyst, so if I ever look confused and look behind me, I'm going to the answer person. And, of course, sitting to my left is Lori Byerly with Department of Administrative Services, and you'll be hearing from her, too. I'll be going through now this one that says agency overview. Just so you know, this may get a little bit repetitive because, as I'm sure you're familiar, the format has me giving a detailed discussion of our budget a little bit later on. So I am going to try to keep this portion a brief overview. And so I'm sure things will come up that will raise red flags or questions or whatever, and my intent is to cover everything in more detail a little bit later.
I was going to say, I went through this with another agency yesterday, and I don't know if anybody else have a problem. I don't have a problem if you merge the overview and the presentation into one, because otherwise we get them two or three times. So why don't you just give us a presentation that covers all of the information?
I would be delighted to do
okay.
that. And with the only one caveat, again, if I look confused because I'm going back and forth between two, understand that.
If you look confused, you'll feel right at home.
Yes, that's true.
All right. So beginning on page one, the mission of the Oregon Department of Aviation is to enhance the well-being of the people of Oregon by advancing aviation in the state. That was a mission that was adopted by the new State Aviation Board that, again, has only existed for about 2.5 years. I want to, even though that's a very short and succinct mission statement, I wanted to talk about that a little bit because it hits on a lot of things that are important to them. First off, our direct clients for the agency, and direct are pilots and aircraft users, the aviation industry. But it's very important to the board to recognize that the people that they're serving are the citizens of Oregon. And even if you're not a pilot, and even if you don't own an aircraft, the policy that and development that this agency does around aviation impacts every single Oregonian. And particularly, we view ourselves as an economic development agency. Most of what aviation does drives the economy. And so the reason that the board came up with this very short mission statement was to show that they're here serving the citizens of Oregon, not the pilots of Oregon. And then, in a nutshell, so the department provides statewide aviation planning. We administer grants and improvement programs. We advocate for the improvement of the aviation system. Provide communication links between all stakeholders, and again, that's pilots, industry, all levels of government, and the general public. Manage and develop state-owned airports. Assist in maintaining compatibility between aviation and other uses. I have to mention the State Aviation Board. I'm sorry that they couldn't be here today because they are having a public meeting in Kaiser, but I'm hoping that if we're still here tomorrow, we can get some members of the State Aviation Board to join us. But they take very seriously the role that they play in setting the policy for what the agency does, and they are really in a nitty-gritty, operational, hands-on basis setting the policy. And looking for the legislature to give them some direction and approve their policy as well. So they take that relationship between the legislature, the State Aviation Board, and the agency pretty seriously. Okay, the programs, I am going to go ahead and go into some detail there. And for your benefit, if you look at then this other handout that says detailed discussion of programs and services. And the program discussion starts just right inside the first page. I know what I'm going to... If you could bear with me here. On the first handout, find page 5, and that gives an org chart. And I think that might help guide the discussion of the program. Okay, so this organizational chart is a little bit confusing to read, but what you can see basically is three components. The top portion is basically the administrative division, and then the bottom portion, which begins with State Airports Manager and Aviation Programs Manager, those are the two other divisions, State Airports Division and the Aviation Programs Division. So that's the picture of what it looks like, and I'll kind of run through what we do now. The Administration Division provides the overall direction and guidance for the agency and supports the work of the other divisions. The three main program areas then in the Administration Division is aircraft and pilot registration, search and rescue, and statewide services. LFO mentioned earlier the aircraft and pilot registration programs. We do register all of the pilots and aircraft owners in the state. That's not a licensing function. The federal government does that. So what we do is register them. It's a way for us to identify who those people are in the state so that we have address contacts and what kind of aircraft they fly and what airport they're based at and that sort of information to help us identify our system, and it's also a way to collect revenues. And again, pilot registration is a dedicated revenue stream. All that we do through pilot registration is collect the money, and then that money is available, can only be spent by the Office of Emergency Management for search and rescue. So for the pilot registration, all we do is collect the money and, of course, the information, which is what's valuable to us. So that was aircraft and pilot registration and search and rescue. Between them, that's one FTE. We have one person that does all the registration. She also serves as our receptionist and splits her time between the two registration programs. And then statewide services leads and manages the department, develops statewide aviation policy, advocates for a safe and efficient aviation system, fosters strong internal and external relationships, manages the agency budget and finances, provides public information and outreach services, coordinates our activities with the legislature. We maintain an aviation lending library and provide support services. All right, the State Airports Division...
is a total of 5 FTE that's divided between airport services and airport maintenance. Currently, we own 28 airports in the state. The last time that I was here talking to you, we owned 31 airports, and one of our goals was to reduce the number of state-owned airports. We've done that. The airport services program manages those airports to provide community access, economic development, and links to medical and emergency services. They manage more than 200 leases and other property agreements, so a major portion of that program area is being a landlord and all of the things that are associated with being a landlord. They oversee the inspection, planning, engineering, and construction on multiple development projects. Coordinate tenant relations again, and then apply for and administer federal grants on those airports. And then, of course, the maintenance staff maintains those airports. I might also add at this point that during the interim, one of the retirements that LFO mentioned was one of our airport maintenance specialists, and because we've reduced the number of airports that we own and we found ways to partner with other community, like city-owned airports, on doing some maintenance together, we eliminated one position with the retirement, and we didn't push him out. He retired, and then we eliminated the position. So that was a nice way to kind of deal with reducing the agency in response to what we've done without displacing an employee. And then the Aviation Programs Division, this is a new division that the State Aviation Board approved just in June. Prior to this, this org chart really had the state aviation or state-owned airports section that we just talked about, with the manager overseeing all of those, and then everybody else in the agency with me overseeing all of that. I am not in favor of top-heavy management, but I have to tell you that I found it impossible for me to keep track of the wide variety of programs that we had going, plus do some of the outreach, plus set the policy direction and some of those things. And so it was really at Department of Administrative Services Human Resources recommendation that we created a new management position and restructured the agency so that we had this new division. There was really no new programs in here, or not new along with this reorganization. It was just a different way of communicating, kind of. And what's happened now is we find that all the everybody on the staff has a much clearer vision of what we're trying to do, and it's much clearer who works together to provide a certain resource or to make a change in the agency, and just generally less confusion. And I don't know if I'm doing a good job of explaining the issues, but this reorganization has worked out very well in the last 6 months that we've had it. So the Aviation Programs Division then is the division of the agency that provides the support services for the rest of the industry and the non-state-owned airports. So that includes airport operations, which is conducting airport safety inspections. We do that under contract with the Federal Aviation Administration. Investigate, propose new airport and heliport sites, license and register all Oregon airports, and provide technical assistance to airport owners and operators on airport safety issues. And then the planning section develops and implements the Oregon Aviation Plan, which is a part of the Oregon Transportation Plan, conducts continuous aviation system planning in conjunction with the Federal Aviation Administration, provides technical assistance on airport planning and development, administers grant and aid programs for airport development, comments on land use and zoning requests that may impact aviation, reviews proposed development that may pose a threat to aviation, and work with other communities and agencies to improve the level of airline service in Oregon. And there is one additional piece of paper that I'd like to is this in the pocket? Okay, I'm sorry. You already have this, but I would like to point out a spreadsheet that looks like this. And it's a separate Senator George had really asked for this. It's under this division. that we manage three grant and aid programs. And it's pretty important, I think, that we mention this, and the reason that Senator George asked is because these are all three new programs since the 1999 session. And what happened in 1999 is we were separated from the Department of Transportation, so that's when we became a unique agency. In that session, we also received an increase to the aviation fuel taxes, and that increase was dedicated specifically to an airport maintenance program. And so I know that you don't know what these initials on this page mean.
Senator Carter has a question.
Just got to it.
Okay.
The acronyms.
I'll explain those for you now, Senator Carter. I'm sorry. Along the top, the acronyms per year, FAM is Financial Aid to Municipalities Program. GA means General Aviation, and more specifically, that's General Aviation Airport Entitlement Program. That's really a federal grant program that last session we worked with you to get approval to administer that program for the federal government, because the federal government got it without really the ability to administer that program, and I was afraid that unless they had some help, that grant money, federal grant money, wouldn't get to Oregon airports, and so we are helping them administer the program. So that's what that is.
Yes, thank you. Can you, in terms of airport security and all that kind of stuff, does this grant allow you to work with the federal government to, and with those kind of, relating to those kind of issues?
Mm-hmm. Chair Dukes and Senator Carter, this GA entitlement program is restricted. There are federal guidelines of what's eligible and what's not eligible for that, and airport security projects are eligible for that.
My reason for asking that question, how secure are we from having the Florida incident with a young boy, you know, got in the plane? Mm-hmm. I mean, how secure are we, how secure are our airports in that way?
Chair Dukes and Senator Carter, that is really a complex question that even the new Transportation Security Administration is trying to answer right now. Personally, I don't believe that that is an airport security issue, because the incident in Florida, he had a student pilot's license, so he had every reason to be on an airport and every reason to have access to an airplane, and nobody yet has talked about a security provision that would prevent a pilot with a license that hasn't already shown himself to be a security risk to not have access to aircraft. So
no foreign incidents of that nature could take place, because you got secure registration programs for knowing who the pilots are, and I really picked up on that. I was really glad to hear you say that. So every person that flies out of our airports has to register with your department, or they're considered in complete violation at that point?
Chair Dukes and Senator Carter, every person that flies, period, must be licensed with the federal government. And so the Federal Aviation Administration really has the authority to do something to somebody that's not licensed. Our authority in registering pilots is, again, different than our registration doesn't give them permission to operate an airplane. What it does say is every pilot who does operate an aircraft in Oregon must be registered with us. And that is exactly the reason that we've got another bill that we're proposing that adds some enforcement to our registration requirements, because right now, even though that is state law, we don't have any way to enforce it. And so we only have about, from our estimation, 60% of the pilots in Oregon are currently registered.
Wow.
It's not good.
Not good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. To continue with this form, and I won't spend a lot of time on it, but what I wanted to show, I was describing the acronyms. PMP is Pavement Maintenance Program. That was a statewide airport pavement maintenance program that is funded with the increase in aviation fuel taxes that took effect in at the end of 1999, actually. This goes back to the history of these three programs. Before 1999, none of these programs existed, and so before 1999, as an agency, we didn't have the need to administer any of these programs. So this is kind of a bragging portion that I wanted to show. We've got 54 communities from Albany to Wasco all across the state, many of them rural, that we've been able to turn quite a bit of money out to develop their airports. And I'm not going to go into the success stories now, but there are a lot of them, and I could probably enjoy spending a week here telling you some of those success stories.
That's the one thing that I had told Senator George I wanted out of this whole hearing was, we created you, and we said that you would be doing pulling in more money from the federal government and doing more for our airports. And so all I wanted to see was, did you do what we said you were going to do? And it appears you have.
Thank you, Senator Dukes. I have certainly attempted to do that. So then back to the presentation. I took that digression just so I could show you the new Aviation Programs Division, and that really is, I think, the exciting part of what we do. This is where the money goes out. Next, then, I'll cover the performance measures. And I think the same charts are in both of your handouts there. And I do have an extra one I want to give you here that didn't get in the handouts. The standard performance measurement forms are the links to Oregon benchmarks, the data sources, the performance measure data summary, which is what I'm just handing out now, and then the performance measure review from the progress board. Senator Dukes, I want to tell you from the beginning that I was listening to Department of Veterans Affairs testimony a couple of days ago, and the rave reviews that they got for having excellent performance measures. I feel a little bit deficient because we don't have a long history like Department of Veterans Affairs does. I don't have a lot of numbers that I can go back to World War II or even 5 years ago to show what's changed. So I think that this might be an opportunity to say this is a brand new performance measurement program. This one is the first time that we've had a unified state way to look at performance measures and review them. And we are a brand new agency, so we're the example of starting off and doing it right, I hope. So what we do have here is two goals, really, that we two performance measures that we included in our 2001 that we were measuring in 2001, I'm sorry, and those were the percent of runways in good or better condition and the percent of runways meeting length and width standards. The third one, which is the percent of airports meeting lighting and navigational aid standards, you can see on the links to Oregon benchmarks form that says it's modified. The way that we modify that, I'm really considering it to be new because we really can't use the old data for comparison. What it was in 2001, that was percent of airports meeting lighting standards. We thought it was important to add the navigational aid standards into that too. But what that means is that the 61% value that we had in 2000 really doesn't apply now. And so I'm considering that one to be starting fresh again. And then also the number of people contacted through public meetings, public presentations, and website visits. We also have one developmental performance measure, and this is an important one. We have taken on a new program area, which is to see what we can do as an agency to increase the level of commercial air service opportunities for Oregonians. That's, we have done a significant amount of work in that, actually. We've done some market data for various airports across the state, actually 13 communities, and we've put on a conference that lots more communities came to, including We had airport managers and city people from California and Idaho and General Accounting Office show up to that conference to find out what Oregon was doing in air service development. Unfortunately, we have not yet been able to identify a way to measure our success in that program because air service development is so tricky. We could spend a lot of money and do a lot of good stuff, which is what most people would do to try and lure an airline, and yet the airline might not decide to come, so it wouldn't have an impact. On the other hand, an airline could decide to come and start new service in the absence of us doing anything. So we still think that it's important for us to do what we can in this area, but we're still working on exactly how we measure that and how we can show the benefit to the amount of effort that we're putting into that. So I'm hoping that in 2 years we'll have a good solid measure on that. I think before I go through the data summary, I do want to review the Progress Board's review of our performance measures. I don't think that I'll read the whole form unless someone asks me to do that, but they did say that we met the criteria that they were looking for. Particularly, they were impressed that we were able to develop our own high-level outcome because we don't have any links to the Oregon benchmark. So they were pleased with that. We put actually a lot of effort into that. And that we have a mission statement that really supports the performance measures. We do have a few key performance measures that clearly articulate the agency's story. We have three outcome measures and one output measure, and I thought that that was a reasonable mix for this size of agency. And again, they were looking for the targets, and I'll go over those in just a minute. With that, then I think I will do the targets next. And again, this was the last piece that was due to the Progress Board Friday. And so we have that for you now, and I'm sorry that that wasn't included in your packet. So I'll go through these again. Percent of runways in good or better condition. And I held off on this a little bit because, again, this is a bragging piece. In 2000, we had 72.5% of our airports in good or better condition. Today, we have 87.1% of our airports' runways in good or better condition. That is a direct result of the three programs particularly in this case, the statewide airport pavement maintenance program, which was a part of this increase in the fuel taxes. I'm sorry that we don't have data prior to 2000 to fill in those boxes. We have it, but it's not in this. I have pavement condition information, but it's not broken down by runways in good or better. So I can't fill in the boxes yet. And again, I'm sorry about that because I think that if I could do that, the numbers would show that the pavement conditions have been declining and declining for years and were on a downward slope, and they are shooting up now. So I just couldn't be happier about this. The targets that we put for that are 90% for the next 3 years, and the reason for that is what that pavement maintenance program does is only goes down to pavements that are in to a certain level of bad. And we say if they're below that, we're not going to maintain them because it's a waste of our money. It would be much more efficient to reconstruct those pavements and then once they're good, to maintain them. So instead, we're targeting our maintenance money on keeping the good stuff good. And so I think 90% is about where we're going to have the good stuff good, and then we'll have the bad stuff that we'll have to start doing some much more major kind of reconstructive projects on. And once we get to the point where we're sort of caught up on the maintenance, then we'll have those funds there available to do the bigger projects and begin to get into those bottom 10% and bring those up too. So the spike that we've seen in the last couple of years from 72.5% to 87%, after we get to 90%, that I would expect that to level off but still creep up. And if this funding continues, there is no reason that we can't have that number be maintained at 100%, and that's our ultimate goal. Percent of runways meeting length and width standards. The issue here is that the airports that currently don't meet length and width standards are small airports in very small communities that don't get a lot of use. And so right now we're balancing the importance of spending a lot of money doing a runway extension at some of these airports could mean moving a road or filling in very low areas that aren't to grade or moving into a wetland or a river or something like that, various really tough, expensive issues. And so we'll begin to look at these again as we've got funds available that will balance the use of that airport and the importance of the standard versus how much it's going to cost to bring us up to those standards. Definitely, this one we don't want to drop. And again, over the long term, we are looking at bumping this one up beyond the 59% mark. Percent of airports meeting lighting and navigational aid standards, and again, this is the one that really is new because we've added more in there. We track several different standards, different kinds of lighting, and different kinds of navigational aids. and in the last 2 years, we really have shown a lot of improvement in that area. It's not reflected in the measure because we may have, Newport is a good example that we added approach lights to Newport. However, they still don't meet all of these standards because they need some other navigational aids. And so these won't move probably every year as we do a project, but as we do a couple of projects, then they'll begin to meet the whole spectrum of standards. So again, this is one that I expect to see increased, but on a slower basis. And so I've bumped that up to moving up to 55% in 05. And again, I expect to see that one continue to move up. The last one, then, the number of people contacted through public meetings, public presentations, and website visits. Again, we just don't have historical data on that. That's not something that we had counted. But we do have enough from the last few months that we could make some projections and some targets. And so those are listed here. We're anticipating some growth in that. You'll see there is a kind of a funny 100 number difference between the 04 and the 05 projection. We hold a statewide aviation conference every other year, and so we will be holding one of those in 04 and then in 06, and that's why the 05 number looks down a little bit from 04, and 06 would show that increasing again. Are there any questions on the performance measures?
Guess not.
Okay, then now I feel like I spent too long on that.
No.
All right. Next section is factors affecting aviation services. This was one of the issues, one of the areas that I really wanted to spend some time on because to me this is the important, this is what's going on out there that affects the services that we provide and how we provide them. One of them is the changing agency culture that LFO mentioned. In the last year, a full 25% of our staff retired. What that means is four people. Remember, we are still a small agency. But in our terms, it feels like 25% of the staff, not like four people, because that's a significant amount of historical knowledge and experience in our office. And we're expecting some more between now and the end of the coming biennium. So that turnover rate means that we're spending more of our time training staff. We're spending more of our time figuring out what's going on rather than figuring out what new stuff we can do. That's kind of the downside. The plus side is with that turnover with new staff, instead of having people that know how we've done it for 25 years and have every expectation that we'll continue doing it that way for 25 years into the future, now we've got fresh ideas and people with kind of energy and motivation to do things different. So I just wanted to share with you the balancing act that we're entering into now between spending time with getting people trained up and ready to operate versus kind of the new blood attitude. So that's just a change that we're experiencing that I thought it was noteworthy. I won't go into that anymore. The State Aviation Board is the other new part. And I can't stress enough how important the new State Aviation Board is for us. When we were part of the Department of Transportation, just because of the numbers, I would have an opportunity to appear before the Transportation Commission rarely, maybe a couple of times a year, and so the policy direction that we got from the Transportation Commission was kind of small. And I don't mean that. I'm not trying to get a dig into the OTC. It was just because we were a very small part of the whole agency, and that's the way it works. Now that we have a 7-member policy body, we meet with them. It has been monthly. Starting this month, we're meeting with them every other month. And each of those meetings is a day at least, sometimes a day and a half or 2 days long, where they really, really dig into what we're doing and why and what we should be doing and why and what the issues are. In addition to that, we have direct one-on-one personal relationships with each and every one of them. And they have been appointed from across the state. And so now all of a sudden, where we might have like me, the head of the agency, saying, well, this is what I pick up as the direction from our policy board because I met with them 3 months ago and they told me that this was the old days. Now, each member of the staff has direct policy communication with our board, and so we're finding that we're able to sort of make policy shifts much faster. But again, that's having some impact on the staff, because if we're making those shifts faster, then there's a little bit more of that unrest or what's going on or this thing that I've been doing for 25 years again, am I going to keep doing that for 25 more years? But overall, this is very, very positive. And again, I pass along the State Aviation Board's apologies that they couldn't be here today, and I hope that they get the opportunity to visit with you a little bit tomorrow. The general aviation industry is very important. What's happening in the GA industry is a very important part of what we're doing. General aviation is everything that's not airlines and not military. In a lot of people's minds, including aviation industry people's minds, that's thought of to be recreational pilot, a rich old guy on the weekend that wants to fly for fun because that's what he likes to do. But in fact, general aviation is much, much bigger than that. Businesses that fly because it's an efficient means of transportation in anything other than an airline, that's general aviation. Even individual people that use aviation as a mode of transportation, that's general aviation. And in the last couple of years, we've seen that increasing dramatically. And that is really the corporate aviation side of general aviation as opposed to the recreational. And actually, the recreational side of that industry has really been declining. But the corporate side is booming for a couple of reasons. LFO mentioned dissatisfaction with the airline industry. Excuse me. That dissatisfaction really started prior to September 11th. Business travelers found that standing in line, restrictions on bag size, the time that it takes you to make all the transfers at the hub and then get the flight to where you're actually going. That's if you can get a flight to where you're actually going. A lot of times, once you get to wherever the airline goes, then you've got to rent a car to get to your final destination. And the ticket prices, which for the business traveler had been really, really going up. All of those things were already creating a shift towards general aviation. We saw more and more business travelers choosing to charter an aircraft or buy their own, operate their own corporate aircraft, or the new program is called fractional ownership, which is like a timeshare. Buy a timeshare in a jet. And then your company can use that whenever you need to, really having the convenience of a corporate jet without having to have the expense of the whole entire thing. And that fractional ownership business has been booming. And I have to add also that Oregon has a new company, which is a new business model for a charter operation that is being implemented all over the country, and Oregon has one of these new models. The company in Oregon is called Sky Taxi, and they operate air charter service on a franchise basis. And the idea is that you call 1-800 number and book your reservation just like you would with the airlines, and they have aircraft located in different places around the region, and so that you can book your reservation to directly wherever you want to go within the region. It's not to be used for, to go to Denver or to go to the East Coast or anything like that, but to go to Baker City or Pasco or something like that, that sort of system would go well. The reason that this might work better than the traditional old-fashioned kind of charter is because by having the centralized dispatch system, they figure that they can keep that airplane full all the time, and so you end up paying a lower rate. Has yet to be seen whether this will actually work or not, but it's noteworthy because NASA has been talking about this kind of a system really replacing some parts of the airline system as we know it because of that, the ability to get point-to-point without all the waiting at hubs. And Oregon has one that's trying this sort of nationally cutting-edge system. All of that, and the reason I've spent some time going through that is because that means that if people are going to be using general aviation more and more, particularly in Oregon, then that really highlights to us the need to have these smaller general aviation airports with infrastructure that's modern and up-to-date and safe and ready to serve that mode of transportation, because it is for economic development type of use. This is not a recreational hobby type of facility. So that's what the reason that we're tracking those changes in the industry. Next, obviously, is the increased focus on security. Since September 11th, 2001, we have done some work with the commercial service airports, which means those airports that serve airlines, to make sure that they are meeting their security requirements from the federal government and helping them do that as much as we can. so far, the federal government has not looked at general aviation security requirements very much, and Senator Carter, this is what you were asking about. They have promised us that this year general aviation security will become one of their primary focuses. So I expect to see more regulation this year, and I'm happy to say that I now have established a relationship with the new Transportation Security Administration people in Oregon, so that as these new regulations come down, I'll have the ability to work with them to make sure that they make sense and they're not going to be driving out business at the same time that they increase security. That's what we hope to do anyway. And then the one last piece is aging infrastructure, and this is just kind of one of the ways things are. Oregon's aviation system, for the most part, was built in the World War II era. That's when most of the airports got built really nationally. That is now over 50 years old, and so that means most of our infrastructure now is all about the same age, and it's all about using up its useful life at about the same time. That is the reason for the decline that was really getting to be to the danger area in the pavement conditions that we looked at before. I am not as worried about this area as I was 2 years ago when I was here, because now we've got the means in place to take care of that aging infrastructure. But that's still an issue that's there and is noteworthy. The next section is intergovernmental committees that aviation serves on, and I'll just go over these briefly to show that we don't act in a vacuum, that we do interact with other agencies quite a bit. We work with ODOT on the Freight Advisory Committee. That's one area that truly is multimodal, and we're pretty active with them on that. We work with Economic Development on the Community Development Forum, and that is a forum where many different agencies work on providing integrated services to communities. We're working with Oregon Emergency Management now on a disaster exercise to make sure that all the agencies know what to do in case of a major earthquake. And then, obviously, we have an ongoing relationship with Oregon Emergency Management, both because of the search and rescue program that we fund and on the security issues and ongoing safety things that might happen at state-owned airports. They notify us of those things. The next page, and I'm looking at the detail presentation now.
Sandra Carter.
Can you tell me if pilots in the general aviation community have the same standards of requirements as pilots in commercial industry?
Chair Duke, Senator Carter, I'm assuming that you mean the same standards for operation of their aircraft?
Yeah, hours, education, continuous education.
No, and again, those are all federally regulated, and they are very, very different. There's a whole book on federal regulations that apply to commercial pilots and a separate one that applies to private pilots.
So how exposed are we as a state agency if, I mean, legally, how exposed are we if one of your planes were doing something with corporate America or with contracting with state agency to go someplace and there was, and God forbid, an accident? How exposed are we legally?
Chair Duke, Senator Carter, is your question, for example, if a state agency were chartering with the private entity to fly? I'm not a lawyer, but in my experience dealing with aircraft accidents and things like that, I think that our exposure would be minimal because the aviation industry is so heavily regulated by the Federal Aviation Administration, and in almost all cases, like 99.9% of the cases, the chief pilot has the final responsibility for everything that happens. And so it's been shown time and time again that ultimately the responsibility comes down to the pilot, who was the one that made the decision to fly or not fly or operate the aircraft. Okay, the next page is our revenue sources that support our program costs. Again, I don't think I'll go into this very much because LFO did a nice job of this. This is another chart that shows the same information. I think at this point, though, I will take the opportunity to discuss Senate Bill 5504, which is the ratification of our fee increase. I want to talk about that mostly because
that reminds me, we have a separate public hearing coming on this bill.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
We
should
save much of our discussion for then.
Except to say that this is what balances your budget, if I'm not mistaken.
Chair Dukes, actually, that's not what balances
your
budget.
Oh, okay.
That's a very, very, very small budget.
Oh, I noticed it was small, but okay. But is it included in the figures that we have? It is, isn't it? No?
It's not.
All right.
Okay, then we'll move on to the next page, which shows historical expenditures in the governor's budget. And again, I think Kathy, our LFO, explained this pretty well. This shows that actually we are looking at a decrease in our budget. Give me just a moment here. The section then that's titled Program Growth and Reduction, I guess I just want to talk a little bit about where that reduction comes from, because now we've heard a couple of times that our budget is actually reduced. A major portion of the reduction does come from the federal funds request, and that is all $6 million, which again is a huge portion of the budget. Is anticipated, that's the most possible grant money that we would expect from the FAA, but still, we need to apply for that on a project-by-project basis individually. And so the $6 million in federal funds is, again, the maximum. And in 2001-03, Again, we had the federal funds in there that we requested the maximum, and so I guess we'll get in that a little bit more when we talk about the capital construction, but that I want you to be aware that that big $6 million portion sort of tends to skew the rest of the numbers as we look at our budget, because that is all federal grant. In a nutshell, our programs then, aside from the federal grant program, are maintained, but I did want to point out that when we get to the policy packages, one of our small grant programs of our three grant and aid programs that I talked about, financial aid to municipalities program, we've been steadily growing that ever since it started in 1999, and so when we get to the policy package, we are seeking to increase that program another $100,000. And it seems about time. When that funding program first began, we weren't able to give all the money away because it was a new program, and communities didn't know that it existed, didn't know how to apply for it or whatever. As of this year, everybody knows that the money's there and everybody knows how to get it. We've been able to give away all the money now. So it's timely to be trying to put more money in that program. I also wanted to point out here that we are solely funded by aviation user fees, and so program reductions doesn't really mean the same for us that it may for a general funded agency, because if we're reducing a program, if we're saving money, then that really means that that money would be sitting there not getting used for anything. So it's more easy for me to think of our budget the same way as I think of my household budget than it might be for other agencies, because we know that the money's coming in, and it's my intent to spend that money back out into the communities doing good stuff. I'm not trying to keep a savings account. What I'm trying to do is spend the money that we have.
Senator Curtis, question. When you were speaking about those funds, I got kind of lost because I was reading as I go along with you. And I'd just like you to rephrase what you said in terms of the use of the dollars. That you want to make sure you spend them. You're just trying to give them away. And I apologize. I was totally trying to read your program growth or reduction.
Yes, Senator Chair Dukes and Senator Carter, thank you for asking me to rephrase that, because this really is important for me. All of our funds come from dedicated aviation user fees. And so I take it as our responsibility to turn those funds right around and get them right back out into the communities. Mm-hmm. And so for me to reduce a program as a way to cut our budget doesn't really make sense to me. What I do is balance our expenditures against the revenues and make sure that obviously that we don't spend more than what we've got. But it's also very important in my mind that we spend what we've got on good programs. It makes no sense for anybody to have a big ending balance that's sitting there growing and growing. I'd just as soon get that money back out there. And in fact, when we look at some of the historical, it's not on this slide, but I think maybe on LFOs that showed our ending balance was a significant portion of our whole revenue structure. I take that as a bad mark against me, because that means I've got money that I could have spent last biennium doing good work that I didn't. So it's always my goal to find the balance between what's a reasonable amount of ending balance to make sure that we've got some security, but not too much, because my job is to get that money out in programs that make sense for the communities. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand what you're saying, but the numbers don't seem to reflect that. We have a growth in the ending balance of approximately $1 million in the 03-05 for an ending balance in 05 of approximately $3 million. I would refer you to full preparation this graph.
Okay. Chair Duke, Senator Morse, give me just a minute, please, so we'll find that same graph.
With their user fees and they're using those user fees to further bring higher levels of technology and efficiency to the industry, identify the image. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I'm wondering why we have a $3 million projected ending balance in 05. This is the highlight that I made.
Senator Dukes and Senator Morse. I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm not looking at the same chart as you or what, but I am certainly not anticipating the $3 million ending balance.
Would that be CCO revenue? COP revenue for the construction
for this budget period.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be $3 million.
Okay. I'm adding what I should be adding. Pardon me.
Okay.
Your ending balance is
money.
Well, maybe you need to re-explain it. You have an ending balance of approximately $2 million. Is that correct?
Or
$1 million.
Yeah, our beginning balance, which is the leftover savings account from the last biennium, is about $2 million. Then our projected ending balance for the end of this biennium is just under $1 million.
Okay.
So we have proposed to spend that down.
Okay. Thank you.
And again, I apologize for the confusion, but I appreciate the question because, like I said, that's an important measure for me.
And I think another question along with Senator Morse. Is the key word that you said that you want to keep enough in terms of security. And so then is there a budget in here that shows how much it costs to do business on a yearly basis for you? And if you if that's some kind of exigency for you in terms of the amount of dollars you have on hand, it's a security blanket for you.
Chair Dukes and Senator Carter, I don't have the perfect answer to your question.
Okay.
I can remember at a time that I was talking with BAM about a certain percentage. But in my head, I shoot for about $1 million ending balance. And so we have been more than that. We're now going less than that, but we're in that
target
area.
So to run the agency per year costs what? I see staff looking at how much it costs to run the agency a year.
If I may, for the record, Lori Byerly, Department of Administrative Services Budget Management. The ending balance of just under $1 million equates to about 6 months worth of operating costs. So double that, you get a year's worth. So about $2 million a year for operating.
About $2 million a year. Because I'm trying to understand the security piece because it makes so much sense. But I'm trying to see if it will match with what Senator Morse is asking.
Right.
Because whereas you're trying to save $1 million, it would appear to me that having a one-year plan for how you keep the agency going makes all the sense. And so if you kept, if you had a $2 million ending balance, that explains why, because if something, we were in a critical economic downturn, you wouldn't be able to run the agency. So having a year operation fee, operation dollar amount as an ending balance is not a bad idea. And that's the only thing I was trying to get to.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hanson, member of Senate Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the fuel taxes that generated $4.8 million in the previous biennium, and you're estimating $5.2 this, how consistent has that income been? Has it had, did you have big drops either around 9/11, or are we seeing growth? What do you base that projected increase on?
Chair Dukes and Representative Hanson, we have seen a decrease in our revenues from the fuel tax. And actually, that was already decreasing prior to September 11th. The airspace for general aviation was closed for nearly 2 weeks. And so if we were to look at a chart of our fuel tax revenues, they were already declining Earlier in 2001, after September 11th, for the month of September and October, there was a deep spike, but after that it got right back on. And so I think that our projection, we have already adjusted our projections to the current biennium, I think down about 5%. Is that correct? Our projections for this upcoming, for the 03-05 biennium are less than what we had formerly projected, but it's still for an increase over what we had, but less of an increase. But I can tell you, and thank you for asking the question, we monitor that on a monthly basis. Because again, more like when I balance my checkbook at home, we have to balance our expenditures to our revenues. And so if the revenues aren't there, we make adjustments. Okay. I'm ready to move on to the program packages then. That suits the committee. Our essential packages present budget adjustments needed to continue legislatively approved programs and services in the 0305 biennium. And so those include personal services adjustments, the program adjustments. Includes a reduction in services and supplies and capital outlay as a one-time cost reduction of $1.6 million. And then inflation price list increase, the costs of goods and services, an increase of $227,000, and that includes an increase of almost $68,000 from state government service charges and a standard 3.5% inflation factor. You know, we kind of skipped over your thing. Did you have anything to add on this?
I think I can just recap.
Okay, all right. So with that essential package, knowing that BAM might have more for us when we're done, I'll move on to the Salem office building, because I imagine that that's the biggest thing that most people probably want to talk about, and I know that I do.
Excuse me,
Senator Morris may have something else.
So they're just acronyms, PICS.
I'm sorry. I'm going to need help with that. Personnel. Okay, that's Chair Duke, Senator Morris.
Position
Information Control System, and so that is the state personnel system. Thank you. I promised myself that I wouldn't use acronyms, and you caught me.
But sometimes the full thing doesn't give you a lot more information than the acronym.
Okay, the Salem office building. Before I even talk about the specifics about it, I have to let you know that I have had a concern since we were broken off from the Department of Transportation 2.5 years ago, that we not be viewed as trying to create our own empire. And I'm very well aware of the perception that this could be just that. And I want you to know that I'm very focused on providing services and developing the aviation system. And it's not my intent to do anything that, like create a Taj Mahal. It is my intent to manage the agency in a fiscally responsible manner, and continuing with the building that we have isn't. Earlier, LFO went over the difference in the maintenance costs between the proposed new building and our current building, and Representative Smith gave a pretty good example of just some of the living environment that we have here. This isn't a proposal that we're putting together because we think it would be fun or to fix some cosmetic issues or because we want to upgrade our offices. It's because we really are in substandard conditions that I'm concerned are inhibiting our ability to provide a good level of services. Some of the issues, what Representative Smith mentioned, was in some of our office spaces. In the summertime, we don't have central air conditioning, so on the hot days, we have window air conditioning units. And some people in their offices can choose any two out of three services. They can have their computer, or they can have their lights, or they can have the air conditioner on. But they can't have all three because it blows the circuit breaker. We have one room where all of the telephone and computer server and all of that kind of equipment is. It's very, very hot in there. There's no ventilation and no way to vent that to outside. And all of our information technology people tell us that it's risky for us to have that equipment in there without having better temperature controls. However, we don't have another place to put it. We've got concerns about the security of the building just because all the doors and windows and everything are old. Thank goodness we haven't had any issues with break-ins or anything like that. And being on the airport environment, we probably do have a higher level of security than a typical office building. However, I do have concerns about some of our computer equipment and things in there. From time to time, when various other issues come up, we've had problems with our oil furnace that it was not working, and while it was going through its kind of death gyrations, pumped some really stinky stuff through the HVAC system. Some employees had to go home because they breathing that stuff just gave them a headache. And we've had issues again in the summer when employees have had to go home because they were feeling ill because it was too hot, because we don't have the ability to regulate the temperature. Those are some of my getting the work done issues. Again, I said that we consider ourselves to be an economic development agency. It's very difficult for me to invite an airline, for example, to come and talk with us about economic development in Oregon when the conference room that I have to meet with them in is also my office. And so there's the work area on one side, then there's the conference room on the other side. And again, we've got the little space heater in the winter or the window air conditioner in the summertime, which makes it very difficult to hear over the rattle of those things. And I don't want to make it sound like a sob story, but I do want you to be well aware that this really is a deficient building, and if we don't do something with it now, we're going to have to do something with it sometime sooner or later. And if it's the judgment of this committee that now's not the time to do it, because I certainly understand all of the issues, we have been living in the building for 47 years and will continue to do so, but I'm afraid that it will continue to cost us more and more to try and continue to get by in the old building. I have also been very surprised that when I've gone around and talked about this to about the building issue to aviation groups around the state, I have not heard from one who has said, no, we don't want you to do that. We'd rather have the money spent on airport development projects or something like that. Every single one has said, nah, it's obvious. You need a new building. Take care of this. And so we have the support of our industry behind us on there. I do have copies of the building evaluation that we had an architectural firm do for us in 1999. If anybody would like to go through this, that really has all the information.
No, thank you. I trust you.
Well, Chair Dukes, I think that's all that I really have to say about that, because I imagine that people have questions. So I just as soon open it up for one-on-one at this point if we need to do that.
Questions? Senator Morris.
You mentioned, Dan, that you were swapping properties with the City of Salem. Is this building being swapped to the City of Salem as a part of that land swap?
Yeah, Chair Duke, Senator Morse, if that's the direction that we take, that we swap land with the city, then they would take the building too.
What was there a monetary consideration for that asset? It may not be the best, but it is an asset.
It is, absolutely. And to be honest, until this committee approved going ahead with this, we really haven't pursued the details of the discussion with the City of Salem. Part of what we were thinking is it's an asset, it's also a liability because that building's going to have to be demolished. And by us simply transferring it to the city, it saves us the demolition costs and transfers those demolition costs to them. So but in the meantime, though, I think that they did expect to use the building for their own maintenance facilities, you know, to pull some of their tractors and rolling stock in and do equipment maintenance in there and things like that. So obviously it would have some benefit to them. So the real answer to your question is no, we haven't identified the specifics of what that deal would entail yet.
My second question, what's the square footage of the new building projected to be?
Chair Dukes and Senator Morris, I believe we don't have a new building designed yet, but we did go through a process with the Department of Administrative Services that identifies the building needs. And so the new building, the needs then are about 10,000 square feet, and that includes the hangar. I'm sorry, the hangar for our airplane.
I'm doing the division in my mind. The cost per square foot appears to be high. If part of that 10,000 is a airplane hangar. What do you got there, Greg?
Yeah.
Senator Smith, did you want to get into this?
Well, I don't mean to.
Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, if you subtract out the land on this, in a land swap at 10,000 square feet at $2 million, that works out to about $200 a square foot. That's awfully high.
Chair Duke, Senator Morse, I do have information that's specifically how our architects came up with the budget figure, and it was based on the square foot numbers. And I'm sorry, I can't find it in my stuff right now, so let me find that for you.
That would be helpful to understand that. Mm-hmm. If I may ask another question.
Mm-hmm.
The certificates of participation are estimated to be $1.5 million, and you would come out of your existing funds for $500,000. To what extent does that become an obligation of the general fund?
Chair Duke, Senator Morse, the ongoing debt service obligation for a full biennium after 0305 would be approximately $500,000. It would not be supported by general fund, but that would be supported by agency operating dollars.
So it's self-liquidating within the fee generation
within the agency.
Within the agency.
Yes, sir.
Representative Smith.
Chair, thank you, Chair Dukes. And then maybe if I could just make an additional comment, as you're looking at the square footage cost of the building, you'd also want to take into account the interest expense that'd be placed on top of that. And so it's pretty expensive. So needed building, very needed building, but it's expensive.
I'm here. It might be good if we went over maybe the process of capital construction decisions, because obviously you're working from a standpoint of a very rough architectural estimate, certainly not a plan, certainly not a big document or anything that'll get honed at all. And we don't, and even at that, we're not sure what's included. I would imagine furnishings are included in that. That helps crank the square footage cost up and makes a little different apples to oranges, I think. But I can't tell you, and I've been here for two terms, and I can't tell you the whole process of how we go through authorizing a construction project, authorizing it, designing it, getting the dollars spent, and getting the building built. I mean, it's not like in this budget we would give an absolute decision to spend the whole dollar value.
There's a capital construction budget.
There's a separate capital construction budget, and then there's a lot of fine tuning that goes on. But maybe we could walk through that process in terms of how we'll get from like here to when a building would be open, and what are the steps of legislative approval through that.
Chair Dukes and Representative Hansen, I'll attempt to do that, and I'll let you know that I'm learning this as we go, too, so I'm looking to my sister agencies to help fill in the blanks.
Chair Dukes, Representative Hansen. What I'm looking at right now is information from the I'm forgetting the acronym. CPAB? Capital Planning
Advisory Board.
Capital Planning Advisory Board, which the committee, which the agency went to, I think back September or a while back. I believe the process would be once the agency had tentative approval from the legislature to go ahead with the project, is the first thing they would do would be to do some engineering and design, and that would be a certain amount of money that would cost to do that portion of the project, and that piece would then determine what the true cost of the building would be. I know from experience with other agency capital construction projects that what those agencies have tried to do is there's been an amount set out there, and then once they've had some engineering and design done, they've tried to scale the project down to fit that dollar amount. I think in this case, I believe the $2 million is based on very rough estimates from this first architectural evaluation that was done in 1999. I think it also has cost for demolition included in that. So there are some variables that could impact the total cost. So I do think it is kind of unknown what the precise cost per square foot might ultimately be. But the first piece would be do the engineering design, determine actual cost, and then that you could make a decision point in there to move forward about the cost of construction and the cost of putting the building up.
Other questions, Senator? Yes?
Being new to this process, I'm assuming that we in this subcommittee would then approve not only your operating budget, but that capital budget.
Okay.
Is that?
There's all of the construction projects that are approved for a biennium are in one budget. And I don't remember which subcommittee gets that budget. I assume that they would appreciate any recommendations from this subcommittee because we're hearing the overall budget.
Why wouldn't that go through Ways and Means?
It is Ways and Means. It's a different subcommittee.
Ways and Means. Okay.
Hi, Susie.
For the record, Susie Jordan with Legislative Fiscal Office. Senator Morse and Senator Dukes, the subcommittees review the budget in its entirety, including the capital construction items. And the capital construction budget, you will approve it in subcommittee and recommend it to the Ways and Means subcommittee that will be reviewing it. We don't know which committee is going to be assigned that bill yet, but when it's assigned, we want to be sure that your recommendation on that is goes to that committee, and they will, unless the agency can convince them that your recommendation is flawed, they will go with your recommendation. So you do influence that.
Okay. In our case, the
recommendation will.
Instead of flawed.
Okay. Other questions? Well, Senator Morris.
I just need to offer a reflection on kind of where I come and the way I would look at these issues if it was me and my own personal business. And with a beginning fund balance that you have of nearly,
$2 million,
I probably would not look at a major capital construction. My own, and I just have to make this known, my own background and personal experiences, office has never added anything to the bottom line in our company beyond what it took to become just efficient with administrative services. So I would look at, I don't know how much land is owned here, but you know, to get, if it's in that kind of dire straits in the kind of environment that we're in, you know, yesterday was a bad day for a lot of people, and today is the worst day. And when, even though these projects can be self-liquidating, you know, within fee-driven, within a department, it still, I think, reflects on the assembly in approving things, at business as usual, moving ahead. So I would tend to look at this as it isn't business as usual. How do we solve your needs without betraying the public's trust when they drive by and say, well, that's just business as usual. There's another $2 million being spent, having no idea what the background is for the source of funds and how it's being self-liquidated. So I would look at this in terms of modular units. And I know that would probably just be a difficult thing for state government to think about. But I would go out and get the cost of moving in modular units that give you the adequate space that you need, and then project into the future as something that's more permanent.
I think it's safe to say that we're not ready to give whatever subcommittee gets this final decision or recommendation yet. So
yeah, I would agree.
Time to have more discussion.
Yeah, Chair Dukes, Senator Morris, and the rest of the committee, I apologize that I don't have better cost data for you here today, because I do have that. And so if we continue to meet tomorrow, I will have that data for you, and it'll give you a much better basis to know where these estimates came from.
Representative Hanson.
Well, a little brief editorializing in terms of business as usual. As County Commissioner at Multnomah County, business as usual was a lot of deferred maintenance, at least if we're talking about it, which eventually there was a lot of days of reckoning that were very difficult. I'm not terribly worried in terms of the perception, because a lot of things we do, the public doesn't necessarily understand each step, and I don't know. I'm not willing to make a bad decision because the bad decision, a bad decision might have a better perception than a good decision. On the other hand, I think something like looking in terms of modular buildings or lesser, maybe some lesser cost solutions certainly is relevant in a possible way. The bad thing is just burying our heads in the sand during a tough economic time and saying we're not going to address, you know, maintenance issues, deferring maintenance, making situations worse, making it harder to dig out of a hole eventually. But I think this is something that we have to find a solution to. But we can sure look at what the most prudent way to do it would be.
We'll have some more discussion on this one. Does Dennis have?
Chair Dukes, members of the subcommittee, my only comment would be kind of along with the lines of what Senator Morris is saying is, maybe this is a bad time, but maybe part of the solution is to look at some kind of incremental approach, whether it's looking at some modular structures or looking at what the cost of actually doing some actual design work would be to kind of get that penned out so the agency would know what the true cost would be. I think what's difficult about not having any guarantee or promise from the legislature on being able to move forward is that opportunities like maybe to partner with the city of Salem and exchange land or partner with military, it puts the agency in a position where it's unable to maybe take advantage of situations if it doesn't have any kind of support, whether that's actual limitation or whether some conflict in the committee on being supportive of that project eventually happening in some manner. So just to kind of lay those things in place so the agency at least can enter discussions and explore opportunities that it wouldn't be comfortable doing otherwise.
And do you have a presentation that you want to?
Well, we weren't done with yours, were we?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're still on policy packages.
Oh, okay. Forgive me.
The building.
Chair Dukes, I am just about done with my presentation.
Okay.
We can go back to the Department of Administrative Services. Moving on, the next page after the office building, we do have some other program packages here. At the top of page 13 is the aircraft registration database. And because our pilot registration program is the net proceeds from the pilot registration are made available to Oregon Emergency Management, and they're the ones that spend it. what I need you to understand is that operationally we view our pilot registration program and aircraft registration program as the same program. One person does it. We use one database that keeps track of both the pilot registration and the aircraft registration. So in our minds, we think of those as one thing, and it's one database, and that's what we're going to be talking about here. Because of the way that's split between different budgets, it appears as two separate things here. So I just wanted to make that clear that it's one database that's funded from two different budgets. So we'll talk about it here under the aircraft registration database, and then on page 14 under search and rescue. But I'm going to, with your indulgence, talk about them as one. our then registration database is a very old database that was first put together, I think, in the 80s when people first started using computers to keep track of this kind of information. Since that time, we've basically had one database that's been kind of added onto and patched and repaired. When we talk to the information technology people at Department of Administrative Services, the ones that maintain the database for us, I get the perception that we're kind of a laughing stock. They always say, oh, yeah, the registration database. I'm not a techie, so I can't talk in computer code or anything like that, but this database has funny code patches, and so that when we have problems with it and we're not getting what we want, it's very, very difficult, which means expensive, for a programmer to come out and help fix our problem, because it's not a clean, easy-to-read, laid-out database. And we have been having significant problems with it, to the point where it's almost hampering our ability just to continue to operate that program to correct to collect the revenues. The kinds of problems I'm talking about are if someone calls on the phone to say, how much do I owe you for my aircraft registration, and the registration officer might say, oh, just a moment, let me call that up on the database, and it might take 5 minutes to come up. Obviously, that's not good customer service when a person called to get that information. And for every query that we do, if it takes 5 minutes for every one, that's really inefficient staff time. also, just the automatic reports that it puts out for us that let us send reminders to people that their registration is due and things like that just are not working. In addition to keeping it running the way that it goes, we would also like to make the registration program available online, and our database, the way it is right now, just won't support online services at all. And so we've been working with the Department of Administrative Services and a group of other small agencies on developing or purchasing one database that would serve the needs of all agencies that have this function to register or license or some other function like that. And actually, it's fairly common. We like to think of pilots as special people, but in reality, registering pilots is very similar to registering architects and licensing beauticians and a whole wide range of things that state government does. And this is one area where we thought, instead of us doing our own thing and them doing their own thing and all the different agencies doing their own thing, let's save some money by getting one database program that will work for all of us and make it work for the online, so that people can go on the Oregon.gov and do any of their registration functions that they need to do. So,
Representative Krieger has a question.
Earlier, did you say that only 60% of your pilots were registered?
That's correct.
So that would be like only 60% of the drivers on the highway having a license?
Is that
the same idea?
Chair Dukes, Representative Krieger, not quite, because, again, the Federal Aviation Administration licenses pilots. So
we're not registering with Oregon for the purpose of getting a fee?
Correct.
Like a lot of people moving in from out of state and forgetting to change their license.
Madam Chair, again, What does that amount to in dollars, that other 60, that other 40%?
It's $8 a year to register, and so it's 4,000 pilots that are not.
32,000. Okay.
Okay. All right.
I have a question on your system. $100,000 from aviation. What's the cost of this program we're buying altogether?
Chair Dukes, the whole program hasn't even been identified yet, so I haven't even heard a total cost yet. But it is the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division that's administering that whole thing.
I don't know all that much about computers either, but this doesn't seem like a complicated program. I just remember, I think it was the last session when we discovered that the going cost for a website was $10,000. And I just figure there have to be less expensive ways sometimes. Maybe there isn't, but if you've got a lot of agencies going in on this, and your part is $100,000, mm-hmm. I just was curious as to what the whole program was going to cost.
Chair Dukes, I can go talk to the people and get the latest up-to-date information and what the anticipation of the whole cost is. I can tell you that I have expressed some concern that I would be coming to you and talking about these packages, and is my estimate too low, too high? Are we going to end up not having enough? And haven't been able to answer that yet. So,
well, you get to take the figures that are given to you by DAS, and so I guess our questions are for DAS. Did I see your hand moving again? No.
Okay. The one program package then that's in the middle of those two is listed as aviation programs. I talked about the one a little bit of the financial aid to municipalities program that we've been growing every year. Again, that's our small grant program. We want to increase that by another $100,000. So currently it's $300,000 for the biennium, and we want to fund that at $400,000 for the biennium. And then in addition to that, we want to put $50,000 into doing West Coast regional air cargo needs evaluation. We've already been working with the Port of Portland and with the with SeaTac and the Federal Aviation Administration on kind of designing how this will all work and what the possible outcome is. This is a very new thing, and it may surprise you, but in the aviation industry and with the Federal Aviation Administration, planning on a regional basis is a new concept that is just in the pioneering stages now. And so this is really looking to be really the first person to try to take a regional approach at evaluating how the air cargo industry is going to change and what our infrastructure needs will be for that. All right, Madam Chair, that is our program packages. The next couple of pages talk about our facilities management. In addition to the building that we've talked about a little bit, we also own 28 airports around the state. All of those airports are listed here.
What did you do with the Seaside Airport?
Seaside Airport, we turned over to the City of Seaside even before I was here, so maybe 7, 8 years ago or something like that.
Yes, never mind.
That doesn't mean that we don't still work with the Seaside Airport.
I understand.
The next page lists our state warning airports. Do you remember when we were talking about the performance measures? We talked about airports that don't meet runway length and width standards. You can see that there are several state-owned airports that don't meet those standards, and one way that we deal with that is list them as warning airports, and that's a way that we notify pilots that these don't meet the standards. It might not be the runway length that you're accustomed to, but we still figure that there's some benefit to having it available for those people that can use it rather than just closing the airport. And again, as far as our liability, the choice in court cases, it's been shown that the choice that a pilot makes to land at a facility is that pilot's choice, given all the information. So as long as we've done our part to give the information and to show that it's non-standard, typically we don't really retain liability for that. The pilot is still the one that makes the choice to use it or not. The next page then is kind of a matrix that shows our capital construction program for the next six years. And so in there we show the $1 placeholder for the Cottage Grove State Airport that we talked about before. And I could be that when we talked about that before, the dollar placeholder was for the Bandon State Airport. Okay. And we really intend to have that placeholder, if that goes ahead, in the Cottage Grove State Airport. We did some switching, and Cottage Grove is where we mean that to be. The reason that seems like we're doing a shell game a little bit is because we work with the Federal Aviation Administration many years out on grants that they're planning on giving us. And basically, while we were in the middle of the budget process, they told us, no, out in future years, we don't want to give you money for Bandon yet, but we do want to give you money for Cottage Grove. And they were, in their mind, thinking of a pot of money that they were moving on. So that's the reason it looks that way for us. It shows that we, in addition to what we've talked about for this biennium, upcoming then, we would anticipate to do construction projects then at Bandon in the 05-07 biennium, at Lebanon State Airport, and GA entitlement again is that big federal grant program that we are administering for the FAA. And then in 07-09, again, the big grant program and project at the Aurora State Airport.
Chair, are we going to go on beyond 10:30?
I was just going to ask if this was a good place to stop, because it looked as though we'd finished a page. And if this is a good place to stop, that's what we'll do, and we'll continue this hearing tomorrow.
That's great. Thank you.